and again. One, a two, a one, two, three.
I don't want you, but I hate to lose you. You got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. I forgive you, 'cause I can't forget you. You got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. I wanna cross you off my list, but when you come knocking at my door, fate seems to give my heart a twist, and I come running back for more. I should hate you, but I guess I love you. You got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea.
George Harrison with Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea, originally recorded, by the way, by Cab Calloway in 1931. This is from Harrison's 2002 album, Brainwashed. You know, sometimes music is just tailor-made for the subjects that we discuss. So here we have The Devil and the Deep Blue Sea, and from the album Brainwashed. It's a fitting anthem, I think, wouldn't you say, for the political situation we're in today, where you have millions of people who, given the political choices they're faced with, feel like they've been caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. Well, we can all mark the last week as a week that we got a very valuable and not to be forgotten political education. Bernie Sanders ended his political revolution with an enthusiastic embrace of the party he decried as antithetical to the interests of America's working class. And he vowed, on top of that, to do everything in his power to elect Hillary Clinton, the symbol and embodiment of practically everything Sanders said was wrong with American politics. His stunning capitulation at the Democratic National Convention, it was understood, also would involve the conversion of a sizable chunk of the 13 million plus votes that brought him into orbit during the primaries. 15 weeks to the general election, Sanders' revolution is all but dead. Its leader, the guy who pulled the trigger and killed it. It's an awful dilemma, but we've been here before. But still, we must ask, what now? Well, here's what Sanders says is what's now. He is here. I want to share with you a clip of Bernie Sanders appearing on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday with host John Dickerson. Here's how that interview went.
All of your supporters are behind Hillary Clinton, and she's going to need them. What would you tell your supporters that they should do now?
I would tell all of my supporters, and we got over 13 million votes, to take a hard look at the real issues impacting the American people. Which candidate, for example, wants to overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, which allows billionaires to buy elections and is undermining American democracy? That is Hillary Clinton's position. Which candidate wants to raise the minimum wage to a living wage? That's Hillary Clinton's position. Which candidate understands that climate change is real and that we have to transform our energy system in order to help save this planet? Donald Trump thinks that climate change is a hoax. Hillary Clinton understands that it is real and we have to act boldly. Which candidate wants to give huge tax breaks to billionaires amidst massive levels of income and wealth inequality? That's Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton believes that we should raise taxes on the wealthy and do away with loopholes for corporations. Which candidate is trying to bring us together, which is Hillary Clinton, and which candidate is trying to divide us up, running a campaign based on bigotry? That's Donald Trump. So I would ask, John, my supporters to get away from the personality conflicts that media tries to bring forward and focus on the real issues impacting the American people. And when you do that, I think the choice is pretty clear, and that is that Hillary Clinton is far and away the superior candidate.
I hate to stick up for the media, but this isn't just a media creation. They were making a lot of noise during Hillary Clinton's speech. There are a lot of people who hear what you've said, and you're obviously going through the issues because these are people who got interested in your campaign because of the issues, and they're not buying it. So I wonder, Sarah Silverman said, Bernie or bust people, you're being ridiculous. So,
well, John, I don't agree with you when you're saying they are not buying it. We have over 13 million people who supported my candidacy. And I have no doubt that there are some of those people who will not vote for Hillary Clinton. But I would say that the vast majority of them, and I think as the campaign progresses and people take a hard look at the issues, who is better for the middle class, who's better for women, who's better for the environment, who's better for the LGBT community, I think more and more of those people will come on board Secretary Clinton's campaign.
During the convention, when Hillary Clinton mentioned you, you looked like you had a bit of a stoic look on your face. What was going through your mind?
I always have that look on my face. You know, it's nothing new. I'm not always a smiley kind of guy. But I believed that, you know, the convention was a very good convention. I thought that Secretary Clinton's speech made some very, very important points. But the most important point to me, John, is that I happen to agree with Secretary Clinton that Donald Trump is not a typical campaign. The whole nature of his campaign is not on issues as much as it is on bigotry, on trying to divide us up, on making Americans think that we've got to hate Mexicans or hate Muslims, the constant insults against women, his birther, you know, his so-called birther efforts against President Obama. That is not what our country needs. So in these stressful times, we ought to bring our people together, not divide us up, which is what Trump is trying to do.
And what are you personally going to do to help Hillary Clinton get elected?
I'm going to do a couple of things. Number one, I intend to campaign vigorously to make the case that on issue after issue, Clinton is far and away the superior candidate. Number two, to stay focused on the real issues impacting the American people. I want to see health care expanded so that every American gets health care as a right, which exists in every other industrialized country. Secretary Clinton and I worked on an agreement to make sure that public colleges and universities will be tuition-free for families earning $125,000 a year or less. That is 83% of the public. So, John, I'm going to go around the country, do my best to make the case that at a time when our country faces many, many serious problems, by far, Hillary Clinton is the superior candidate.
Do you see your role as possibly blowing the whistle if Hillary Clinton moves off of some of those promises, or if she were to become president, if she doesn't keep her eye on the ball as you see it, that your job will be to say, hey, wait a minute, you're not keeping your promises?
Well, John, that's a good point. I mean, we work with the Clinton people to forge what is far and away the most progressive Democratic platform in the history of any party in this country. And to answer your question, yes, I will return to the United States Senate, hopefully with a Democratic Senate. I'm going to do my best to see that we have a Democratic Senate. Hopefully we will have Secretary Clinton as president. And in that capacity, I surely will do everything that I can to make sure that a Clinton administration and a Democratic Senate and the House, to the degree that I can, stands up for working families, is prepared to take on the billionaire class, is prepared to try to create a vibrant democracy, not allowing billionaires to buy elections. I will do all of those things.
All right, Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us.
Bernie Sanders being interviewed yesterday on Face the Nation on CBS, speaking with John Dickerson, the host of the program. Very disconcerting stuff that we're hearing. But it is very clear that even if people are upset, if people are still puzzled about where Bernie Sanders is going, Bernie Sanders is not at all puzzled. He's not at all unclear about what he's going to do. And this is the political education part of the discussion. What did we learn here? What happened here? And whose job is it to take care of unfinished business? We still have someone, okay, he has already capitulated to the Democratic Party and to the nominee of the Democratic Party. In fact, he played a critical role in the nomination, the official nomination of Hillary Clinton. So something happened. There's a major switch going on. I don't recall that there was a meeting. I didn't see coverage of it. I didn't see notice of it. That there was a meeting or some kind of internal discussion within this movement as to what Bernie's next step will be. And I didn't see that he was given permission or he was given the green light to transact business with the Democratic Party as a sole agent. I had always thought that Bernie Sanders had positioned himself firmly within a movement that gathered around him and that gave him not only momentum, but legitimacy as the agent of all of these issues that people wanted enacted and people had as top priority items on their list. And these 13 million votes, remember, since September of last year, I've been asking, this is the thing that needs to be taken care of, this piece of business, up front. We've been down this road of people emerging as leaders of one sort or another, only to see a departure from the aggregate movement into a solo practice. And they become entrepreneurs, political entrepreneurs. And they engage enthusiastically in entrepreneurial politics. That is, they make the movement pay off for themselves. What happened here? What was the deal? Was it simply a matter, as Bernie Sanders presents it, that it was a matter of practicality and pragmatism, political pragmatism? He was just not going to be the nominee of the party, and therefore, you might as well, if you can't win him, join him. But on the other hand, we still don't have a definitive answer. We still don't have clarity about what was this movement designed to be and to do in the first place. From what you hear about Bernie Sanders articulating it himself, it appears that this entire movement was about reforming the Democratic Party, adding dimension to it, bringing it into a new world, a new political world. Was that the purpose of this movement? Is that why people were in the streets and pounding on doors and passing out leaflets and doing all this kind of work to make the Democratic Party a better, more inclusive party? I don't recall that was the mission of this movement. In fact, quite the opposite. I recall that the stated mission of this movement was to fight the Democratic Party and to establish a brand new path. But you see, they started out with a contradiction. Bernie Sanders was a, quote, democratic socialist, unquote, whatever that means, operating under the aegis of the Democratic Party. So he started out with a contradiction. And the people who supported him did not insist on clarity with regard to that. Are you a Democrat or are you a socialist? Are you running within the confines of the Democratic Party? Do you see yourself, in fact, as a Democrat, but perhaps a little more left-leaning than the rest of the Democrats? What is your political identity? And we are clear that you have a philosophy that you say is very different from the standard issue of the Democratic Party. You have some more progressive ideas and so forth, and you decry the party's coziness with corporate America and all these other things. We get that. But nobody kind of insisted that Bernie Sanders first describe who he is and what he is. What is this entity that is emerging here, hoping to start a, quote, revolution, unquote? And what is going to be your ongoing relationship with the Democratic Party? That was the first clue that there was work here that hadn't been done. This is basic work. Everybody needs to be clear about where you are, where you stand, what you're about. But they accepted Bernie as a nice guy. He seems principled, unlike the other person. And, you know, he's a progressive person. So all guards were down. He is, in fact, what he says he is. And people took him at that, took him at his word, which is awful. Not the way you do politics at all. We have to be clear about who you are. What is it that you're about? If you are a Democrat at heart and you wish to introduce perhaps an element within the Democratic Party, you wish to establish within the Democratic Party a more left-leaning wing, then say that. In which case, we'll move on. Because our aim and objective is not to reform the Democratic Party. They have enough money to hire consultants to do that job. Why should people help the Democratic Party be its better self? That's not your job. They got the money. Let them go hire consultants and experts and political whizzes and come up with an idea and a plan for how you become a better Democratic Party. That's not what people's time and effort and energy ought to be directed toward. That is a bona fide job. People are looking for answers to the problems that they experience every day. So you present yourself, and the people naively accept you because of what you say. Even when there were signs along the way, they overlooked these things, because they were so emotionally invested in this, they forgot to be pragmatic. They forgot to use common sense. The first order of business was to establish the political and the power equation between candidate and so-called followers and define it. This isn't about you wanting our support. This is about people deciding whether to make an investment in you. Therefore, your job, you have a job. Your job is to demonstrate your worthiness of this investment or worthy or would-be investment. That's your job. This isn't, well, I'm here, you should support me. That's the old politics, and that's one of the things that people have to grow up and change. You don't repeat these cycles. You say, okay, you want support. Who are you? What are you about? How do we check you out? And we will decide whether you're worth supporting, whether you're worth the investment. And that will involve an arrangement. The arrangement would be that we are not your followers, we are your supporters, we are your investors. And like any other investors, we demand accountability. You can't just fire off and do whatever it is you want to do. You could do that if you don't need our support. But if you do need our support, and if you are, in fact, going to be predicating your political rise on the currency that we're putting into your campaign, you better be prepared to account. See, this is exactly what happened in the Jesse Jackson situation. Jackson shows up and he talks that talk, and people go crazy. Oh, Jesse, oh, Jesse, oh, Jesse. They're not discussing just what is this entity that they're looking at. What are you politically? Okay, where do you come from politically? We're just supposed to accept the fact that, you know, you used to hang out with Martin Luther King and you used to protest and you have a good record of civil rights. That's fine. But that does not answer the question, does it? A whole bunch of people were also walking along with King who should not have been. So you check out the leader. And you establish early on that the leader is not the leader in the traditional sense. You are creating the leader. You have some very, very important and direct say in what the leader does, and more importantly, what the leader does not do. You are, after all, constructing a system. A system is a scientifically devised method that aims to have a success in achieving specific goals. What people have done over and over again, and the progressive community here has to deal with the mess ups that it made. And I'm not really beating anybody up. I'm saying this is the time to do this kind of work, to examine where you went wrong, and to make sure it never happens again, because it has happened again. And you're fully responsible. This is the thing. We are fully responsible. We cannot say, well, this is Bernie Sanders doing his thing. No. It is that you failed to reconstruct the whole formula here. You should be in a position to fire your leader. That's important. It isn't that there's a leader and the minions running around doing the leader's bidding. No, you have an investment here. Because supposedly what brought you and the leader together is an agreement on the things that you share, the concerns that you have, the things you want to do, to be able to improve the situation for the vast majority of people. But you're not a servant. You are very much an equal here. And the leader is not above you. The leader is to be held accountable by you. And when the leader departs from an agreed upon, or what you think was an agreed upon agenda, to the point of appearing to totally contradict everything that you went into this effort for. Your job is to fire the leader. You publicly declare the contract or the presumed contract between the leader and the so-called followers null and void, no longer in play, no longer valid. The leader has failed, and you fire the leader. This is very important. Why? Because to this day, Jesse Jackson runs around, not just around the country, he runs around the world as the presumed leader of something called the National Rainbow Coalition, which does not exist. He hijacked it, and the people let him do it. And it's the one thing that he needs to remain supposedly legitimate, and that gives him access, and that allows him the, quote, right, unquote, to transact business in people's name. He's running around like an ambassador with a portfolio because the people did not cancel his contract publicly. They did not hold a news conference, the specific aim of which would have been to announce that you have parted ways with Jesse Jackson. You have fired him. You don't have to be specific about it. Just have to say that we had a meeting, and this is what we agreed. We no longer recognize Jesse Jackson as having any leadership role or capacity with respect to our movement. That's all. We are publicly canceling the contract, if there ever was one, but you publicly are severing ties, is what you're saying. You are rescinding the credentials that he has, and those credentials were predicated specifically on the perceived support of these millions of people to give him personally power to do whatever it is he wants to do, unchecked by you. It's the same thing we just heard Bernie say. Well, he got 13 million votes. Well, this is not just you. This isn't your votes. This is 13 million people making an investment. Not just in you, but in the things that you said you were going to do. You did not tell the people, well, I'm really a Democrat, and my whole aim here is to help the Democratic Party be a bigger, better Democratic Party. That's really what I want to do. No, you didn't say that. You represented to the people that you were coming up against the machine, and with an alternative that people have been longing for, and here's the opportunity, support me. You didn't say, I am a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. You certainly didn't ask people, when you were contemplating shooting your own movement to death, well, what should we do now? So the first job that was messed up here on the part of the people was to get clarity among themselves, and certainly with Bernie as the titular leader of this movement, about the role, what is expected, and what they are prepared to do if he doesn't perform properly. You see, the community has to grow up and exercise a kind of leverage that they are certainly entitled to exercise. The reason these things happen time and again is that people believe there is no penalty. There is no penalty to pay for betrayal. There's no punishment. And people make it a self-fulfilling prophecy. These folks come out of the woodwork and they say they're going to do this and they're going to be that. And they want your vote. That's all they want. And people just think it's just a vote. And it isn't. You are granting a license that these folks would never have to transact business on a scale that they never will be able to do without your permission, which is your vote. You are investing, and you are basically giving credentials to these people to do these things. It is incumbent upon the movement, whatever is left of it, to move very assertively on this question and fire the leader. Fire him. Publicly fire him. It would be a great turning point for grassroots politics, because the prevailing view in grassroots politics is that nobody pays for mistakes. Nobody has anything really to fear. And in the end, it's a process of manipulating a bunch of gullible people to get where it is I want to go. And when people, when Bernie Sanders talks about, I've gotten there 13 million people plus who supported me and so forth, he needs to understand what that means. And for future reference, the remnants of this movement have to act in a particular way to signal a turning point, a major turning point in the mentality and attitude of politically involved people. You're not saps. You're not a bunch of people to be used. You are deadly serious about your political investment. And you expect accountability, and there will be swift and certain punishment for betrayal. No question about that. If you do just that, we're good. I'm good. Because that would signal within the world of grassroots movements that people have come of age and they understand the value, the intrinsic value of this thing called the vote, and how much is actually invested when a person chooses not just to vote for a person, but chooses, and the word they throw it around very casually, but it's a very loaded word, when somebody supports a candidate. You have Bernie Sanders people who literally almost lost their jobs. Some actually resigned from their jobs to devote their time to doing this political organizing. You have people who put money that they didn't have into supporting this movement. And you have the travesty of an individual suddenly becoming an individual now. He's not the leader of a movement anymore. He's making an individual decision that compromises the movement, that throws the supposed aggregate support of this movement behind the most offensive candidate there is out there, who is the living embodiment of the exact opposite of what it is Bernie says he stands for, and by extension, what his constituency stands for. And here he is, enthusiastically. Not only is he embracing her and the party that spawned her, but he is making sure, he said. He intends to make every single effort to make sure that she prevails and that the party prevails. Well, what you're saying to your 13 million voters is, screw you. I don't need your permission. I don't need to know what you're thinking. I am the leader. And that is why the people must say, we understand that. But you're fired. You're the leader, but you don't measure up. So we have a tradition now of firing the leader. It's very important that they do this. Very, very important. People have got to react to a system in a very important way. And that way is to signal that you're not passive. You're not passive people. There is a great deal of sacrifice and commitment and all kinds of ways that people invest themselves in a movement. A large part of it is emotional and psychological. That people become involved because they see compatibility between what is professed, what is being sold as the premises of this movement, and what they've been yearning for. That is not to be toyed with. And if it is to be toyed with, the person doing the toying must know it will cost him or her. That's very important work to do. That's very, very important political work. You fire an undeserving leader, a traitorous leader. You fire that person. Publicly strip that person of any shred of credentials that are left. You take everything away from that person and you make it clear this person has no validity, no connection, no further association with this movement. We'll figure it out. We now must gather ourselves and figure out the next step. But the first step is we're firing him. He's got to go. Now comes the other part. What's next? Well, what's next is a political process. And that also involves the maturity of the people who coalesced to form this movement in the first place. There is not going to be unanimity of agreement. There's not going to be love and peace and understanding. You have to understand that so much goes into the process here by the detractors and by people who have a vested interest in destroying your movement to create friction, to create dissension, to distract from the task of plotting ahead, following a plan. But it's a new movement. And it's part of the growth process. And it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody that there's going to be a lot of friction. That's part of the formula for destroying programs, especially those that have great promise. And I want to concentrate a bit on this phrase I just used, that have great promise. This movement has extraordinary promise. And I'll tell you why. Despite all of the bells and whistles of the respected campaigns, the Republicans and the Democrats, I can tell you, if you very closely observe, you will see that these things suggest a great deal of unease about the candidates. They're not so sure as to how things would turn out for them. Hillary Clinton is far from secure, and the Democratic machine is far from secure about her security. You look at the numbers and they tell you everything you need to know. With all this firepower that she has coming into this political process, why is she still struggling to put some distance between herself and Donald Trump? Why is she lagging behind in the polls? That's the story. All this hoopla to say, oh man, we've got it. No, they know they don't have it. You've been a former First Lady of Arkansas. You've been a president's wife, First Lady, 2 terms. You've been in the U.S. Senate. You've been a presidential contender. And now here you are again. You've been Secretary of State. All this high-profile stuff. All these things you supposedly accomplished in each of these areas, and you are still struggling like hell to put a couple of points between you and Donald Trump, who just showed up on the political scene yesterday. It means that she's not the gift that she thinks she is, and the Democratic Party knows it. They know, and they're seeing a hemorrhaging occurring in the Democratic Party, people who can't abide the idea of actually lifting this woman up yet again to the highest office in the United States, though she is completely undeserving of it and, in fact, unqualified by virtue of her ethical challenges, which are still ongoing. Who wants somebody like that as president? They talk about Donald Trump, and who wants somebody like him? Who wants Hillary Clinton? There's a lot of Democrats who will either switch and become Republicans in protest or just not vote at all. So Hillary Clinton is far from safe, and there are only 15 weeks left, and she's got to do something decisive to break far enough away from Trump to signal that she's got that support. It isn't yet in hand. It isn't yet manifesting itself. And they are worried. Trust me. All that stuff with the Democratic Convention and balloons and this and speeches and whatnot, it all is to cover up the fact that they're running really scared. And this is why the Democratic Party, like any other marauder, will look at the easiest place to get help to achieve the goals and objectives that it has. The objective is to win. We see that our base is eroding. We see that Hillary is not universally loved and embraced by the traditional Democratic Party. We see the likely defection or just non-participation of many people in the Democratic Party this time around because they can't stand the idea of supporting somebody so tainted for the highest office in the country. So you look for wherever you can guarantee support. And this is after, by the way, this is after documented sabotage of Sanders' campaign. This is after documented widespread fraud, voter fraud, so to assure a Hillary win. But she's got to get the votes. And who has the votes? The votes are with blacks. The votes are with Latinos. And the votes are 13 million if we can co-opt the leader and make him do our bidding. Bring to the fold if I get even half of your 13 million, I'm happy. And that's a deal. And this is why the odd thing is at precisely the moment that this movement has greatest significance, this is when the leader decides to take out a gun and shoot it in the head. To disable it. Because, you see, support this massive has to be controlled and managed very carefully. You do not have that much time. So you have to be very certain about the predictability of these specific voter bases. You got the blacks because you sent out Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and the other black folks who talk black stuff to black people. Go out and vote for Hillary. And they are just delighted to assist Hillary into history. And blacks are loyal Democratic voters to their own detriment, but that's a whole other story. So you got the blacks. The Latinos used to be like the blacks. They used to be unquestionably loyal. No more. There are signs of rebellion. There are signs of fickle stuff going on there. There's an issue of immigration. There's the issue of unemployment. There's the issue of, you know, the living wage and so forth. And they're being very skittish right about now. So you can't declare that you've got the Latino vote. So you look elsewhere. Where is there an organized group? And 13 million votes is one huge windfall that you didn't have to spend money to get. You didn't have to campaign to get. You didn't have to lay out any funds to get. All you have to do is to capture the leader. The leader, in turn, captures the votes that you want. And you get it for free. And that is this movement. Plus, you could accomplish a twofer here. You get this batch of votes, and you utterly destroy a potential threat, not only to you, but to the Democratic Party itself. Because there's no question, this movement would have picked up enough speed, and it would have arrived very soon, maybe not this in this cycle. But 13 million votes is impressive in any cycle, especially for an upstart. Which is why you have to kill it now. Which is why Bernie Sanders has to be fired for assisting in the execution of his movement. So, Hillary Clinton is in desperate need of help. Never mind all that stuff that they're trying to tell you how solid she is. She ain't solid. Not at all. Not at all. And she has to come up with a definite pool of dependable people between now and November. And they have to move fast. And they have to be predictable people. This is no time for guessing. Is you is or is you ain't my baby. No. You've got to be clear that you're in my corner. Or else I have to move on. And this is what is happening here. This movement, and I'm not trying to just be, you know, the great advocate for a movement, but you see the potential. This is exactly what happened with the Rainbow Coalition. You had disparate groups working like crazy to overcome all these historic barriers to people working together for a shared objective, a common cause, and they did it. And they voted, they gave Jesse Jackson 7 million votes the first time in 1984, which is stunning. It's a stunning victory. No, he didn't become president, but that was not the point. Everybody knew he was not going to be president. But with regard to the objective, he won. And won stunningly. They didn't have money. They didn't have a war chest. They didn't have a well-oiled machine. They didn't have unlimited budgets for television and radio advertising. This is a totally spit and chewing gum operation. This is muscle. And you won 7 million votes the first time, and you got 11 million, 4 million more the second time. You know you're looking at progress. You know you're looking at achievement, which is exactly why he decided to agree to destroy it and co-opt it. And he got away with it. He still gets away with it. This movement, coalescing around Bernie Sanders, is an excellent, excellent movement, and it is worth fighting for and defending. I would even go as far as to say that. It is worth defending. Because it had proven the essential elements of political organization. They got their act together. They funded themselves to some degree, a very impressive degree, even though Sanders kept saying proudly, with an average of $27 per person, that's phenomenal. It means that there are people receptive to your ideas. If you now choose to betray that, you know you've got a price to pay. We will have to declare you null and void. We will have to consign you to the dustbin of history. So this is the work that the groups that began to organize, and any other such group, this is stuff that they need to take note of. Because this is essential to building movements. You have to have integrity, and you have to have integrity in protecting and defending the integrity of your effort. You cannot allow this to happen, and then people act like, well, you know, it's unfortunate that it went that way. No. This is piece of the business you have to do. You have to make it clear that you have fired the leader. You have severed ties. He no longer qualifies to represent you in any way. And your movement continues. It's a hiccup. You encountered a hiccup. But it's not going to be fatal. You can continue the work. But you must send a signal as a turning point for all political movements, all grassroots movements. When people, at great sacrifice to themselves, make an investment in a vision and in an aggregate action for the greater good, and you have people like this who come along and smash it to smithereens, expecting there is no price to pay. You send a signal that that's changed. That has changed. This is not for the faint of heart, but it is absolutely necessary to do, because you have to reclaim it. You know what the program was. The program was, and it succeeded in large measure, to fracture and utterly destroy what the Democratic Party correctly. This is the thing. They correctly interpreted this movement as the greatest threat. It isn't Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not the greatest threat to the Democratic Party right now. It is this. The possibility that grassroots people will behave unpredictably. And this is what's causing them to have panic attacks. This late in the game, they should have had everything in place. They should have been really clear and confident about where the support is coming from. They are not. This is where the power lies, even with a fractured movement. It's proof that you are doing the right thing and you are being very effective. So don't get disheartened. Don't fall apart. Don't run for the hills. Stand strong and do the business of firing the leader. I thank you very much for joining me today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele, a really, really incredible program. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege, and I mean that, to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You off my list, but when you come